From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we talk with one of the world's most admired action directors, John Woo. He directed the new film Face Off, starring Nicolas Cage and John Travolta. It's Woo's third Hollywood film. He established himself in Hong Kong, making comedies as well as martial arts and gangster movies. We'll also talk with the screenwriters behind Face Off, Mike Werb and Michael Colleary. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The White House says U.S. forces provided backup for today's capture of a wanted Bosnian war criminal. A second suspect was shot to death as NATO troops tried to take him into custody. Officials say the suspect, a former Bosnian police chief, shot at troops as they tried to detain him. Reporter Shretsko Latal is in Sarajevo and says NATO released a statement about the incident.
The statement confirmed that at approximately 9:30 this morning, the NATO-led peace force detained indicted war criminal Milan Kovacic at a hospital in Prijedor in northern Bosnia. That detention took place without the incident. In a separate detention action in the vicinity of Prijedor, indicted war criminal Simo Drljača, who is the former police chief in Prijedor, opened fire on S4 soldiers as they approached and challenged him for the purpose of detaining him.
National Security Advisor Sandy Berger says President Clinton authorized U.S. logistical support for the operation. This is the first time that NATO troops have arrested war crimes suspects. Federal prosecutors say parts of tape recordings containing racial slurs repeated by Texaco officials may have been erased. Assistant U.S. Attorney Stanley Okula alleges that an independent investigation by Texaco has found evidence of the tape erasures. More charges could be lodged against Richard Lundwall, the former Texaco executive who brought the tapes to light, if it is proved that Lundwall erased the tapes. Lundwall released the recordings last year, in which he and other employees allegedly verbally abused black employees and planned to destroy evidence in a racial discrimination lawsuit. The television industry and its critics are ready to agree on changes in the six-month-old TV rating system. As NPR's Brooke Gladstone reports, congressional leaders say an official announcement is expected later today.
The system the TV industry devised to rate its own programs was roundly condemned by some legislators and parents groups who charged that the age-based codes, similar to the movie system, did not provide enough content information. After months of negotiation, the major networks, with the exception of NBC, apparently have agreed to add V for violence, S for sex, L for strong language, and D for suggestive dialogue to the existing codes. They will also add a special code, FV, for fantasy violence, to programs rated Y7 to mark children's action cartoons. In exchange, House and Senate leaders have agreed to hold off pressing for more regulation of television content for at least 3 years. The parents' groups have also agreed to lay off the industry, but for a shorter time. This is Brooke Gladstone in New York.
R.J. Reynolds says it's dropping its controversial ad character Joe Camel in favor of a new ad campaign featuring the ordinary, more lifelike camel on the label of the cigarette packs. On Wall Street, the Dow's down 20 points at 78.22. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, the stock market is lower on concerns about corporate earnings. Bloomberg's Doug Krisner reports from New York.
The day's earnings news has been mixed. On one hand, blue-chip names J.P. Morgan and General Electric were among the companies reporting better-than-expected results. However, Seagate Technology and Pairgain Technologies failed to reach expectations, and there were warnings of weak profits from Kmart, Lowe's Companies, and Precision Response Corp. Meanwhile, shares in Apple Computer are lower after the company's chairman and CEO Gilbert Amelio resigned 1 week before the company's earnings report. I'm Doug Krisner.
ValueJet Airlines is buying AirTran Airways in a stock swap valued at about $62 million. The new airline will drop the ValueJet name and may be based in Orlando. ValueJet has had trouble with its image since the May 1996 ValueJet crash into the Everglades, which killed everybody on board. The deal must be approved by shareholders and regulators. A group led by Bell South Corporation and a Brazilian bank have won a license to operate cellular phones in the city of Sao Paulo. The offer was nearly $2.5 billion and dwarfed all other competitors. A Bell South spokesman acknowledged the bid was extremely large, but noted that Sao Paulo, with 17 million people, offers higher density of potential cell phone users than Los Angeles or New York. Further, the condition of conventional phone service in the city adds to the cellular operations potential. Again on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 20 points at 7,822. Trading is heavy. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music, putting a world of knowledge within your reach with over 160 locations across America. 800-644-7733.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, John Woo, is the director of the new hit action film, Face Off. It's Woo's third American film, having made 26 movies in Hong Kong, including comedies, martial arts films, and gangster films. Some of Woo's Hong Kong movies, especially The Killer and Hard Boiled, developed a cult following in the U.S. Quentin Tarantino was one of Woo's early champions. Woo made his first American film, Hard Target, in 1992. Woo followed that up with Broken Arrow, which, like the new film, stars John Travolta. In Face Off, Travolta plays FBI agent Sean Archer, who is pursuing psycho-terrorist Castor Troy, played by Nicolas Cage. In a complicated plot twist, Agent Archer goes undercover, taking the identity of terrorist Troy, after government plastic surgeons transplant Troy's face onto Archer's. But then terrorist Troy forces the doctors to give him Agent Archer's face. So the good guy now wears the face of the bad guy and vice versa. Travolta and Cage have a ball with this identity swap. Here's a scene shortly after the transplants. The terrorist, now posing as the FBI agent, has come to the agent's home. He walks into the agent's teenage daughter's bedroom, and instead of being the strict father, he's leering at her lecherously and looking approvingly at her cigarettes.
Clarissa left those here.
I won't tell Mom if you don't.
When did you start smoking?
You'll be seeing a lot of changes around here. Papa's got a brand new bag.
Ow!
Undo the jerk. Oop. Undo the swim.
I asked director John Woo how he cast John Travolta and Nicolas Cage.
When I got a script, the first person in my mind was John Travolta, because I truly believe why John playing a good guy, he's so much convincing and it looks so real. And then after the switch, when he became a bad guy, and he will definitely will bring a lot of fun, and he looks so charming while he's playing a bad guy. And then me and John suggest using Nicolas Cage. And for myself, I always dreamed of working with Nick Cage, because I found he's not only a great actor, he also is a man with a great heart. You know, he's a really care about the other one and care about everything, and also very serious about everything. So I... And then after we put them together, and that make us feel these two gentlemen are really the perfect match.
It's so much fun to watch them take on each other's characteristics after they've traded faces and traded personalities. Did you make any suggestions to Cage and Travolta about what they should copy from each other?
Yeah. Yeah, before we start shooting, we had to spend some time for rehearsing to create the character, to design lots of different things for the two different characters. Like I had designed some gesture, you know, for them, and the other thing is that most of the funny thing was created by John and Nick. So. Like the way Nicolas Cage walk and the way he talk And it just looked so funny. And John was imitated from him, you know, how he walked, you know, and how he talked. So they worked very hard on rehearsing. And the other thing is that I also did some experiment. And then during the shooting, I saw all the cutscenes to both actors. Let them to watch each other scene, and then to let them to learn and imitate from the tape. So they will never make any confused, and they go with the characters as well.
That was interesting, an interesting idea to show them outtakes that weren't going to be used in the film.
Yeah, because, you know, there are not much people who would like to do that, because some of the directors will rather, you know, keep a secret, you know.
There's a scene toward the end of Face Off in which all the characters each have their gun out and each person has their gun pointed at somebody else. So everybody's got a gun pointed and everybody's got a gun pointed at them. You had a very similar scene toward the end of The Killer in which the two men who have been pursuing each other through the film have their guns drawn on each other in a stalemate. And Quentin Tarantino borrowed that at the end of Reservoir Dogs. How did this become an almost signature shot for you?
Well, I just want to show, you know, all men are equal, you know, no matter the good guy or the bad guy, and they all only have one chance to live or die, you know. While making The Killer, I tried to create a moment is to show they're all mankind, they're all pretty much the same, you know, no matter the good or bad. And also the idea was came from the Mad magazine, Spy vs. Spy.
No, you know, really?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Mad magazine and the cartoon, you know. You know, they, Spy vs. Spy, the black and white bird against each other, but even though they are enemy, but actually they are friends. So I tried to create an equal moment to show that. So that's why that became my trademark. Because in my theory, I always believe there's no really a good guy or bad guy in this world. I think all the mankind, they have a they all have a very special quality.
So, you know. So you read Mad magazine when you were in Hong Kong?
Oh yeah, I read the Mad magazine for years. I'm a big fan. Yeah.
Now, a lot of people describe your action scenes as looking beautifully choreographed, and you've said that you've been very influenced by Hollywood musicals in how you do the action scenes. What Hollywood musicals do you particularly love that have influenced your action scenes?
Well, mostly the old classic musical, like Singing in the Rain. It's lots and lots of Fred Astaire's musical, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, West Side Story, all the jazz, you know, and The Wizard of Oz. I have seen a lot of musical, and besides the musical, I also a big fan of the cartoon. You know, so that's why my kind of action sometimes pretty much like a cartoon.
Well, it is like a cartoon in the sense that no matter how much a person is knocked down and beaten up, he springs back up again to fight some more. If he's the leading man, if he's a secondary character, he's probably going to get killed.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people would say that that's a bad thing because it leads people to think that violence doesn't really hurt and that violence doesn't really kill people, that violence can be fun.
Well, I think some people might be a little too serious about my movie, you know. The action in my movie, I always feel it's pretty much like the ballet dancing or the cartoon. To be honest, I have never intends to selling violence, you know, and actually I'm not a violent guy, you know. I've never learned any kung fu. I've never fight with any people. I've never fired a real gun in my life, you know. I just make it fun, you know. Maybe the way I shoot usually a little too strong. Before I start, if I figure out something, you know, something from the news, something from the newspaper, if I read something like a little child having murdered or some innocent people are being killed, you know, by a madman or by a gangster, or some people lost their life in a war, that will usually make me very angry. Very angry and painful. And then I put that emotional into the scene. And then I will let my hero hit the bad guy harder and harder, you know. Since it's so much emotional, so that's why the impact so strong.
My guest is director John Woo. His new movie is Face Off. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is John Woo, and he directed the new film Face Off. He's directed several movies in America, but had a long career in Hong Kong before coming to America just a few years ago. In talking about how dance films, how musicals have influenced your action sequences, yeah. I would imagine that was even more true in some of the Hong Kong films in which the fighting was martial arts fighting, and you were doing a lot of, you know, hand-to-hand and foot-to-hand
yeah.
Kind of combat. That's very choreographed.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the kung fu films, they're very, very choreographed and also pretty much like dancing as well. Because most of the Hong Kong director or stunt coordinator, they have been trained by the Peking Opera. So they are very good at those kind of like dancing action, you know.
Were you trained by the Peking Opera?
No, never, never.
Do you dance at all?
Yeah, I dance a little. When I was in high school, I was a ballroom dance instructor. You know, I taught folk dance, waltz, tango, you know. So I feel myself as a dancer, you know.
That's why
when I say that, you know, I'm choreographing the action, it seems like I'm dancing, you know. I'm dancing with the actors.
Now, what were some of the things that you did with the camera and with the speed to make the fight scenes more dramatic? Things like slowing up or speeding up or slowing down the scene.
Well, each shot, I would like to set five or six or three or four camera, and each camera have a different kind of speed. You know, like one is a normal speed, the other maybe 120 frame, the other maybe 60 frame. You know? And then I put them together, see how it look, how it feel, and then I edit with a soundtrack. I mean, it means I cut with the music. I usually use a soundtrack to cut with the scene. So when the mood or when the music rhythm go, that will usually give me the feeling to use the normal speed or to using slow motion or slow motion shot. So. And then after we put the whole scene together to go with the music, see how it feel.
Is there either an action scene or a fight scene that you can break down for us almost shot by shot and tell us how you made it?
Well, it's a little hard, you know. Of course, at the first beginning, we did some storyboard, you know. But I just used it for the reference. And in Hong Kong, you know, I have never used any storyboard. So because I like to create everything on a set. When I go to the set, I would like to see what I had, and so I usually choreography everything by myself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes with my assigned coordinator, and I put myself as a character, as a hero. So if I usually see how I feel first. Okay, for example, if I'm in a lobby and ambushed by 20 guys, okay, and I only got 2 guns in my hand. So how could I deal with all those 20 guys? So I need to figure out myself first, and then I will choreography with my stunt coordinator and demonstrate with my stuntman, and then I will rolling on the ground and get up and shooting some guy on the left side, and then spin around, jumping in the air, and taking care of some of the guy on the right side. If I like to keep the beauty of the body movement, keep it look great, if I'm spinning in the air, then I will like to put some other 2 guy up on the ceiling. And then I shoot them in the air, you know. If I feel I could do that, it will make me feel my actors also can do that.
When you were making martial arts movies, did the actors ever accidentally hit each other really hard and hurt each other?
Oh, yeah. In the old time, yeah. You know, and some of the... actor wasn't a real kung fu guy, you know, so they hurt each other by accident, you know. It always happened, you know. Except that once a while for the Hong Kong martial arts film, they went crazy, you know. They Jackie Chan or Sammo Hung, those kind of movie. They like to, you know, hit the guy real, and they're really kicking the guy and beat up the guy. You know, in the mid 70s, you know, the people used to like to do that. Some actors will really get hurt.
Have you ever had an actor or a stuntman hurt while shooting a scene?
No, never. I always concerned about the safety. Safety first. So and I also know how to use the camera technique to make it look great and avoid the dangerous. You know, sometimes get a slightly hurt, but you know, a little cut, but it doesn't mean anything. And I have never liked my actors or stuntmen risking their life to do all those dangerous thing. I mean, that's worth it, you know. I always believe a movie is about editing, camera, and lighting, and the drama. It's not about risking your life to do some crazy thing, you know. In face off, there's a scene that the speedboat chase, you know, at the ending.
Yeah.
One of our stunt double, you know, he doubled for Nick Cage. You know, the thought was he fell off the boat and dragging alongside the boat, and then flip up to the ski. You know, that famous scene, and he almost got killed in that shot because the. At the first time, when he fell, and his head went down first, so his head hit the side of the boat, and he lost consciousness about a few seconds, you know. And he almost lost his life.
Well, how did that make you feel?
I feel very upset. I feel, and I did try to stop him and didn't want him to do it again. But the guy was so brave, you know, he because that was his idea, you know, he wanted to make it. He wanted to do a great job, so he did try it again. So
now, when you're making an action film like Face Off, every new action sequence is supposed to top the one that came before it. It's supposed to get just more and more exciting and climactic. What do you consider to be your most exciting moment in Face Off?
Every moment. Yeah, I enjoy every moment in Face Off, and but the most exciting moment was in the middle of the movie, the huge gun battle scene in the loft. You know, the over the rainbow scene.
Yeah, the song that you're hearing is Over the Rainbow, because you're hearing the cassette that a little boy is listening to as this violence erupts behind him, and he's listening to a recording of Over the Rainbow. So that's the music on the soundtrack.
And you see all the violence, you know. So I the idea of the scene is anti-violence. You know, I try to, you know, every action sequence. I intend to send some message. So while we shooting the scene, I just hate to see, you know, the people killing each other, and the good guys or the bad guy, and the bad guys or the good guy. You know, it's so boring. And then I came up with the idea, you know, how about to put a children's song into the violent scene, beside to get the message that anti-violent and also can show how the violent destroy the purity, you know.
John Woo directed the new film Face Off. He'll be back in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
30, 45.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations and by Barnes & Noble, booksellers since 1873. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more with John Woo. We'll talk about growing up in Hong Kong and his recent move to Hollywood. And we'll meet the scriptwriters of Woo's new film, Face Off. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with John Woo, director of the new film Face Off. He grew up in Hong Kong, where he made over 25 movies before coming to Hollywood. Now, you moved to Hong Kong from China with your parents when you were 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
What was the neighborhood like in Hong Kong where you moved to?
It was really bad, you know. As I raised in a slum, you know, we live in a very bad neighborhood. You know, like drug dealers, the gambler, the prostitutes, and the gangster, you know. And every day I got to deal with the gang. I even beat up by the gang quite often, you know. So I have to struggle very hard and fight very hard. You know, I got to fight back to be survive.
Were you good at fighting back?
Yeah. You got a feeling like to live or die, you know. So I was so lucky to have a great parents. That's my mom and dad, they taught me go for straight. And I also helped by the church. Since our family was so poor, they couldn't afford me to go to school. And there were an American family, they sent the money through the church to support my school fees for 6 years. That's how I got education.
Now, I understand that your house burned down when you were young. Where did you live after that?
We were living on the street for 1.5 years, like all those homeless people, you know. So, but we've never had any self pity, you know. And my father usually give me a lot of encouragement. So I'm so proud of my parents. Yeah.
When you were growing up in Hong Kong, what were the movie theaters like?
In the old time, most of the Hong Kong people, they were so much crazy about a theater. You know, they love movie because since we're all poor, you know, the only entertainment is to watch a movie. And in the old time, the parents can bring the child into the theater for free, you know. So I usually sneak into the theater to watch every movie.
You lived in Hong Kong until about 4 or 5 years ago. You made most of your movies in Hong Kong, most of your movies so far. Is one of your reasons for moving to America the takeover of Hong Kong by the Chinese?
No, not really. You know, about 5 years ago, I was invited to come to this country. Since my movie The Killer draw a lot of great attention, you know, from the studio, Universal Studio, there were so much interest to working with me. So I took the chance because I just felt since I already worked in Hong Kong over 25 years. I think I've done enough. You know, I really need to learn something more, something new. So that's why I came here. And the other reason is about my family. You know, in Hong Kong, I work crazy. You know, I work 7 days a week, 18 hours a day, and I spend most of the time in the office and in the studio. So my children, they were very can recognize my face, and they're getting to hate me, you know, because they have never got the real love from their father. So and that really scared me because the family is the most important thing to me. So that's why I decided to move to the stage. But when we moved here. I find the people here, they never work on a weekend, you know, and so everything back to the normal.
What have been the most difficult things to adjust to about working in Hollywood?
About the system, you know, because at the first beginning, I have never known they were so complicated, everything so complicated in Hollywood. And also, there are so many people involved. And I have never get used to, there's so many producers and so many meetings. Lots of meeting, and it could take 6 or 7 months just for a meeting and repeating the same thing. And I have never known the star got so much power. You know, the star can control the script and also could control the co-star, you know, everything. I just a little confused to me, because I always felt for making movie should be simple. Everything got to be simple. And also, to make a movie should be a lot of fun. The other thing was there was a different feeling about the heroes. You know, when I got here, I've been told that in the American movie, for the American hero, you know, they never die, they never cry. And the hero got to be very strict. And then I said, well, it kind of boring, you know. My kind of hero usually in between the good and the bad, you know. But the great thing I have found in Hollywood is all the studio, they're really, really open, and they really gave me a lot of great respect. The other thing is I also found the people here, they are so much professional and dedicated.
John Woo, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
John Woo directed the new film Face Off. Coming up, we meet the screenwriters. This is Fresh Air. My guests, Mike Werb and Michael Colleary, wrote the new film Face Off. They wrote their first draft back in 1990. Werb also wrote the Jim Carrey hit The Mask. Colleary has written screenplays for Roger Corman. Face Off revolves around an identity swap in which the good guy and the bad guy swap faces through state-of-the-art plastic surgery. The identity swap leads to some wonderfully entertaining acting from John Travolta and Nicolas Cage, but it is a pretty improbable premise for which the writers had to come up with a medical explanation. Well, here's the doctors describing the procedure to a skeptical FBI agent played by Travolta.
This is a state-of-the-art morphogenetic template. The inside is modeled on your skull. The outside exactly like Troy's. Then we fit his face on top. Not a replica, but the real thing. Then we simply connect the muscles, tear ducts, and nerve endings.
So you want to take his face and mine?
Borrow. The procedure is completely reversible.
You think that I want to do this? No. No.
There's no one else, Sean.
No!
You have lived and breathed Castor Troy for years.
I'll get his gang to talk. That's what I do.
Well, if you can't, the bomb will blow, and Castor Troy will win.
The screenwriters told me they came up with the identity swap idea because they were interested in the good and evil aspects of man.
Michael, in particular, is a Joseph Campbell nut, and I'm kind of a mythology nut. And what greater trick could Zeus play on two men who are so obsessed with each other than to have force them to become each other? And that was kind of the initial conceit.
Now, what happens in this is that Nicolas Cage's face is surgically removed and transplanted onto... let me say this again. No, that's
well,
right.
That's true, too.
I get so confused.
Terry, you're having the same problem that we had describing to people. What we ended up just doing was telling people that they switch identities.
Right, but they switch faces, too, through this complicated plastic surgery, which is just absurdly improbable. I mean, there's no scars, there's no swelling, there's no black and blue marks, no nothing. How much did you have to worry about the credibility of the plot?
Well, amazingly enough, when we started writing this in 1990, it was more far-fetched than it is today. In fact, there was an article recently in some national paper about how in the next 10 or 15 years, you know, the technology will exist to pull off things like this. Now, granted, the swelling, obviously the swelling issue and the
scar issue. No pun intended with the pull off.
Yeah, exactly. that stuff sort of tests the limits of plausibility.
But one of the things that came to us when after we'd come to the plot, come up with the plot, somebody that we know had a horrible hang gliding accident, and they actually took his face off and reconstructed the underlying tendons and muscles and bones and cartilage, and then put it back on. So we took it a step further.
Now, one of the things I love about the film is watching Cage and Travolta exchanging mannerisms and personalities. It's a real acting fest. Did you realize the acting potential within the idea of the identity swap?
Well, initially we had written it for Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. Keep in mind, this was in 1990, and of course they were sort of the biggest heavyweights around. But after the project left Warner Brothers, Michael and I really started to talk more and more about the psychological underpinnings of what the film was really about. And Paramount very much encouraged us to write that story. And the more we wrote that, we realized, you know, this is probably the only film in Hollywood history in which two actors get to play good and evil and they don't have to play twins.
How did John Woo get to direct this movie? And you had written the movie in 1990. John Woo has been in the States for a few years. This is, what, his third American movie?
Yes,
correct.
This is his third American film.
So how did he get to
direct
his
first Hong Kong film in the States?
It was, there is actually an interesting story about John Woo's involvement in this movie. When the project was at Warner Brothers from 1991 to 1990, I guess late 92, Joel Silver was the producer, and he actually offered it to John Woo when John first came to Hollywood. Now, Mike and I had never heard of John Woo. We came a little late to the Hong Kong awareness of Hong Kong cinema. And I actually saw the trailer for The Killer, just couldn't believe what I was
seeing. Michael went back to and paid to get into the last Revival House in L.A. just to see the trailer.
Yeah, the next night, because I still couldn't be sure. And so when the film came, Mike and I went to see it, and we realized that John Woo was the perfect director for Face Off. It just had all the themes and ideas that he seemed to love in his films were just by coincidence in Face Off. But of course, we had no idea he would ever
read it,
let alone direct it. And finally, I guess in early 95, we met John. Mike Werb's agent and John's agent are the same person, the same agency, the William Morris Agency, and we were able to meet John. And we expected to meet this very kind of, you know, Sam Peckinpah-esque. We'd seen a lot of his films by then, and, you know, this John Huston, hard-drinking, gun-toting guy. And, of course, what we met was extremely polite, courteous, thoughtful man, and a real film nut and a guy who loves musicals. And he just couldn't have been less than, in reality than the person we envisioned. And he complimented us profusely on the script for Face Off, and we were just so flattered and thrilled. But, of course, he was going off to make...
Well, at that point, we walked away thinking that was absolutely the highlight of our careers.
Yeah,
exactly. Was just to meet him and spend an hour chatting with him. And it's still, he was making Broken Arrow, and we never really dreamed that he would actually do the movie.
But as it turned out, you know, we had another director on the movie, and it seemed to be going another way. And that, as often happens in Hollywood, just didn't work out. And John became available again, and signed on to the film. And of course, John and John Travolta got along so famously on Broken Arrow that John Travolta was, you know, very happy and willing and wanted to work with John again, which is unusual in Hollywood. You don't tend to see the same actors working with the same directors unless it's De Niro and Scorsese and so forth. But we've just been very fortunate in those ways.
You know what I wonder, like when you're writing an action scene with a lot of explosions and stunts and so on, do you write, you know, like good guy chases bad guy, mayhem ensues, lots of explosions, parentheses, director, you figure it out.
No, we never do that. Even if the director does not film what we write, we always write it in an extremely detailed manner, all the beats that, And, you know, also pacing the timing as best we can. The scenes ended up being certainly a lot longer and a lot more poetic than could be written in a screenplay.
When you're writing a scene like the climax in Face Off, where there's a boat chase and boats are getting destroyed, things are getting blown up, there's a lot of stunts in the water, do you have any idea what it's going to cost when you're doing it? And when you're writing it, do you have like the cheap Roger Corman version in mind as well as the expensive, you know, the expensive version in mind too?
I'll let Michael answer that since he's worked for Roger. I've worked for Sam Arkoff, but you said
Corman. Interestingly enough, and I actually can reference Roger Corman. In this case, I did have several meetings with Roger on an action film. It was my first job many years
ago. Rescue in Lebanon.
Yeah, Rambo goes to Lebanon was basically it. And Roger had the same answer, interestingly enough, that Stephen Reuther, who of course was executive producer of the film and partners with Michael Douglas, and they always say the same thing, which is just write it and we'll worry about, you know, making it work later and paying for it later. And they really want your imagination to, as a writer, to just cut loose and do the best you can, because if you stumble upon a gag or a stunt that is really crucial in a story point, or just for the fun of it, they will try to find a way to make it work.
I want to get back to the premise of two people exchanging faces and exchanging identities. I know, like, when I was a kid, I'd sometimes borrow a sweater from a girlfriend, and I'd feel like her. I mean, I'd feel like somewhat transformed by seeing this article of clothing that identified with her on me. So one can only guess what it would feel like to be wearing somebody else's face. Did you try to imagine what it would be like to wear somebody else's face?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because we actually spend, if there's a business call or and even a personal call that I really don't want to take, but the person doesn't know my voice, Michael will take the call and act like he's me. And I've done that for him. And we spend a lot of time doing that. And I think subconsciously that generated a lot of this plot.
When we first started out, there were a lot of unscrupulous Hollywood types who would take advantage of film students and so forth.
And they're all gone, of course.
And there are none left in Hollywood. But so occasionally, you know, when we were starting out, we didn't really know how to deal with people really giving us the full court press. So we would try to help each other out that way a little bit.
When you were writing the screenplay, before you knew that it was Nicolas Cage and John Travolta who would be playing the two characters that exchange identities, did you write in little bits of business that would be associated with each of the characters so that the actors would have to pick up on those and then exchange them after the identity exchange?
Yeah, we did. From the very first draft, we realized that in order for this to work, in order for the audience to buy the conceit of this movie at all, there would have to be very distinct differences between these two characters. And one of the things that we set up, which are some of which are still in the movie and some of which are not, but Sean Archer, the FBI agent, is very emotionally distant. He does not smoke. He does not drink. He does not swear. He's a very uptight person. On the other hand, the Castor Troy character, the assassin, we made very distinctly an extremely passionate lover of life, albeit very cruelly. But this is a man we described in the screenplay as a walking hard-on. And he drinks aggressively, and he makes love aggressively, and he is, in a way, an odd way, much more full of life. And when they have to switch roles, of course, the hero has to learn how to do all those things that he's completely unfamiliar with.
And we gave the reader a lot of, you know, cues with dialogue. For example, there were certain catchphrases that, you know, that Castor would use, you know, that some of, as Mike said, some made it into the film in some variations. One of Castor's lines was, I have a confession to make, but you aren't going to like it. And he used to use that right before he generally kill someone. We would take certain words and put them in one character's voice, and then when they switched faces, it would come out of the other actor's mouth, the same words. And
like the secretary in the FBI office, she's worked for the hero for years, and he still calls her Miss Brewster. When the bad guy returns as the FBI agent in disguise, he starts calling her Kimmy and slapping her ass and doing all sorts of sort of sexist things that the hero would never have done.
Right. Are there things that Travolta and Cage came up with that really surprised and delighted you?
Oh, almost everything. From the first time we met them at a party, a sort of get-acquainted dinner party last August. And it, even up to that point, no one was really sure if physically people would ever buy the switch. And we were just astonished and thrilled when John and Nick sat beside each other at dinner, and just the shape of their faces and the way they cocked their heads and so forth. And after dinner, they started to mimic each other. They started to talk about, well, I'm going to walk like this, and Nick, you know, you walk kind of bow-legged, and John,
we had
this. And
we had a real Hollywood moment that night. It was very strange for us to suddenly see the movie actually come alive well before it went into production. John and Nick, we were introduced to them. We started talking to them for maybe a minute or two, and very quickly we were lost to them. And they started quoting lines from the screenplay and started talking about getting into character, basically. And they, you know, Nick would go, oh, John, whenever you're picking up a glass or whenever you're talking, you, like, do this with your hands. And then Travolta would say, Nick, you walk exactly this way when you're really angry. And then they would do it. They would start doing each other. And they were in profile. And despite the fact that they look quite different head on, we could see that, you know, they're about the same stature and they have many sort of physical attributes that are similar. And we were totally lost to them. We looked at each other also in profile and shook hands behind a palm tree. And it was just great.
My guests are Mike Werb and Michael Colleary. They wrote the screenplay for the new action film Face Off. Back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Mike Werb and Michael Colleary. They co-wrote the screenplay for the new film Face Off, starring Nicolas Cage and John Travolta. John Woo, the director, has only recently acquired English as a second language because he's only lived in the States a few years. Were there parts of your script that you had to explain to him because they're based on colloquialisms or in-jokes that someone not very familiar with English just couldn't get?
That's funny you ask, because we spoke to his assistant one day.
Oh, this is funny.
Who was going through the script making a list. She was actually, John had gone through his script and circled all the kind of swear words he didn't understand.
I think at one spot, Terry, there was a reference to a G spot.
Yes, a G spot
that needed to be explained
to John. And John's far too polite and discreet to ask us directly, because you know, he didn't want a chance offending us on some level, which of course he never would. But yeah, he took care of that. I mean, he's very conscious of the fact that it's funny because his English is quite good, but he doesn't seem to have, he's getting better now, but when we first met him, he didn't seem to have a lot of confidence in it.
Actually, I think he did. I think he's just more comfortable with us.
Yeah, that's true too.
A question for you about violence in action films. Do you worry about the amount of carnage in this movie, and that, you know, young people seeing it might get immunized to violence because, you know, so many people die?
We were very nervous about a lot of the violence and took responsibility for a lot of it too, and had many discussions among our just the two of us about it. As Mike said earlier, that opening flashback scene you know, when we first started writing it, that was going to be kind of more hinted at and suggested originally, and of course ended up being the first scene of the film, and very powerfully done. And we were concerned about that. We were very concerned about Eve being raped. I mean, we to us, that was by far the most horrible thing in the film.
It's interesting that most people that see the film don't seem to realize that she is being raped in the movie. And that took us although it's a short scene, that was one of the longest and hardest scenes for us to write.
Because we just, in fact, when we were conceiving the movie and plotting the movie, we were trying to find a way not to have that happen. But we realized that if we were going to be true to the dilemma and true to the situation, at a certain point, that's what happens when you write. At a certain point, you know, the story takes over and the characters take over, and there was really no way to do that without severely damaging the structure of the film.
If the bad guy does not fool her, he can't possibly fool anyone for any length of time. So we had to have that scene, but that was a quandary that, as Michael just said, the story demanded.
So we definitely were concerned, and we were happy in a sense that the film got an R rating, because we felt like that would keep younger kids out of the movie. It is disturbing. There's no doubt about it, even though the movie's done in a kind of a over-the-top operatic fashion. It is something that we think about, and John Woo thinks about quite a bit.
You wrote the screenplay together in 1990. That's when the first draft was written. Are you still partners? Are you still working together?
Yes.
Well, as Michael says, now that we're successful, we only talk through our agents and on radio shows.
Yeah. We do still work together. In fact, we're writing John Woo's next film together, and we've hung in there pretty well as partners, and we've been friends for a long time, even longer than the partnership.
That was one of the rules that we set up when we first decided we were going to write a script together, and Face Off was our first screenplay together. Was that the friendship came first, and if that was ever threatened, we'd stop writing together. Fortunately, it's just brought us much closer.
I guess that's because you have good agents.
That's right. They translate everything very, very well.
Well, congratulations on your success with this film.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
We really are thrilled to be here.
Mike Werb and Michael Colleary wrote the new film, Face Off. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Naomi Person, Phyllis Myers, Amy Salad, and Alan Tu, with Monique Nazareth. Research assistance from Sarah Scher. Our intern is Francis Yu. Roberta Sherrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.